Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem, Ruvi. This is Rob Yardoumian, the author of Sound of Songs Across the Water. I'm on today with my good friend and fellow Portland resident, Yuvi Zalkow, the fellow debut novelist of a brilliant novel in the works. Now, Yuvi and I share quite a few things in common, from a literary standpoint at least, and a few others. So we both have debut novels. Yuvi's novel came out last summer. Mine comes out in a few weeks, June 11th. We both live in Portland, Oregon, which is how we first met, and we both share a common publisher, MP Publishing. So the thing I wanted to start talking about, Yuvi, you know, Portland has a reputation, I think, growing nationally as sort of a creative hub, you know, a haven for creative folks. You know, most of whom don't have jobs and wear flannel shirts and sit in coffee shops all day. Some of us
have part-time jobs.
Yeah, some of us have part-time jobs. That's right. So, what's your sense of living here in Portland and specifically Portland as a writing town? How has that worked out for you?
Yeah, well, to me, it happened in slow waves. I moved here in 1999 and. One of the big reasons, in addition to having a breakup and being laid off, was places like Powell's Books. It just seemed like a town like that, I mean, that would have a bookstore like Powell's Books, has to be a cool town. And so I started meeting people. First, I just joined a writing group just that I found on a bulletin board, an actual physical bulletin board at Powell's. And I met a few writers there, and they introduced me to a few other writers. And I started taking classes with teachers in the community, and then they introduced me to other writers. And so every year or so, I'll find a new little group of writers. You know, I didn't meet you until, what would we meet, like a little over a year ago.
Yeah,
but
about
it's
a year
fun
ago.
To see all these different pockets of writers. And, yeah, I mean, in a way, it's a kind of a small town. But it turns out there's a lot of writers. They just maybe are in different facets of town and with different watering holes and places where they read their writing. So it takes a while to realize how big it is, it seems to me. What do you think?
Yeah, that's interesting. There are a lot of outlets here. You know, I think part of the writing life is to lock yourself away in your dungeon/office for a number of hours per week, however many you can carve out of your life, where you try desperately not to get interrupted and get into that, where you're actually getting reasonably good black on white, as they say. But the other part of it that I think Portland is particularly good at is giving folks – okay, so you've done that for a few weeks and you're going stir crazy. You know, here's a chance to get out and – go to this bar and hear three people read, or go to this coffee shop and hear three people read with a guy playing the banjo in between them or something. I mean, there are so many reading series and performance series here in town that on any given week, there's usually a pretty good option of stuff you can go hear. And I think that builds this sense of we do this thing that is particularly it is internal, and it doesn't lend itself to meeting people or being particularly sociable. So the thing that Portland does pretty well is it gives you an opportunity at least to get out there and get out of that self and realize that there are a lot of folks doing the same kind of thing. And there's a lot of good work being done here in town. There's a lot of different kinds of work. And I like that aspect about it. It doesn't feel particularly competitive. In that sense, it
right.
seems like you meet people and they're actually willing to, oh, I know a guy. You should meet this guy who runs this series, or you should meet her. She's a great teacher. Or I know a writing group who's looking for somebody. And people seem willing to go out of their way to welcome you, and you can sort of blend yourself into that at whatever level is comfortable for you. As opposed to, I lived in Los Angeles for 20 years. before moving up here in 2006. And there is some kind of a writing community there as well. But there is also, of course, this enormous community of actors. And that kind of dominates the cultural landscape down there. And that is an enormously competitive field. You know, it's like you go on these auditions and casting calls, I'm imagining, I've never been on one, and you're sitting in a room with like a dozen other people that look exactly like you, because that's what they've called for, but only one of you is going to get the gig, and, you know, 11 of you are going to go home pissed off again. So, you know, it's a little bit different in what we do, and it's a little bit different in the way it feels up here, which I think is pretty welcoming, and that's nice.
Yeah, and I do like that there's a lot of fiction readings and poetry readings and nonfiction as well in little coffee shops or bars, daytime, nighttime. There's a lot of low-key kind of activities around town in addition to the obvious ones that are the person reading at Powell's or the person reading at a big location with tickets. There's so many little ones that are pretty friendly and welcoming, both in the audience.
That's another thing that's really interesting about Portland. I'm sorry, I jumped right in on you there. But that I've noticed moving up here, and I talk to people about this, and it manifests itself across a bunch of different kind of industries. It's a totally entrepreneurial town. Like, if you move up here and you just have ideas about things, for example, I want to start a reading series. So I go down to the coffee shop on the corner where I get my coffee a couple days a week, and I talk to the woman there, and she's like, yeah, that'd be great. Why don't you come in on Tuesday nights? And then you've got a thing. And then you can put it in whatever direction you want. And that entrepreneurial sense is really unique here, that you can, if you want to create a good reading series, make one up yourself. In terms of restaurants or different kinds of businesses, no matter what it is, If you have an idea, this is the place to come to start a little food cart on the corner, and you know, a year from now you might have three restaurants, and that's kind of how it works. And it seems like it functions similarly in writing as well, which I think is both healthy, and it gets to that sense of, you know, we're all jumping in on this together, and in the same way that musicians in this town all know each other, and they all play in each other's bands and work at each other's studios and that kind of thing, I think there's a similar sort of feel with the writing community, that somebody in that writing group knows somebody who does that reading series who read at so-and-so's poetry thing that time, and they know the dude. So I think that's a really useful aspect about living here, and it does kind of help you fight off that sense of having that world of writing close in on you and you alone, and there's no one you can really share it with.
Yeah, which is, I keep going back and forth for a little while. I'm like, oh, I'm sick of all people. I'm going to just hide away, screw everybody. And then a week later, I think, oh, well, there is that reading series that's just a few blocks from my house that I could at least say hi to my buddies. And I know that I feel the push and pull of both completely hiding out and writing, and also you could also spend every afternoon and every night doing some literary event.
Well, you know, we're writers, so at a certain base level, we're misanthropes anyway, and we hate people. And, you know, when we feel like we need to crawl out and plaster on that smile, at least there are some interesting places we can go to do that. So that's nice.
Yeah, I buy that.
So part of that craziness of trying to write, you know, another thing that we share is a house full of kids.
In your
house, you have a toddler and you have a teenager, right?
Yeah, right.
In my house, I have
tying their shoes.
Mine's about to turn 8. So
yeah.
How have you found this writing life now that your your space has been invaded by these young members of our species with their just insane needs and constant, you know, just all the stuff that they bring to our lives, good and bad.
Yeah, it was definitely a shift. And for me, I married my wife when she already had a kid who was 7 at the time. Now he's 16. So I was in this kind of single life, living in a little bungalow where every room was a different form of a writing room. I had no dining room. Really, the kitchen was just for drinking while writing, not just alcohol, but I just didn't have solids there. And then I shifted into this family mode, and it was a tough adjustment. It took some time to acclimate to it and to become comfortable with it and to realize where it works and where it doesn't. And for me, I actually do a lot of my writing at coffee shops and restaurants nearby. Sometimes when I just need to get away from family activities, when I write at home, I have troubles writing at home, and I don't have an amazing space. I have a little attic area, but I tend to do a lot of writing at cafes, and I try to keep it at cafes where I don't know people, so I have to hop around town to remain anonymous. But I do a lot out there, and sometimes I write at home, but I don't do it when I'm on duty. It's too maddening, and it's too easy to get to become an unpleasant person when I try to juggle that. So a lot of when I'm at home with the family, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I've always written at home, both before my son was born and since then. And I've always been pretty good at just, you know, the word selfish comes to mind. But I always had, before my son was born, I had a particular time of day, first thing in the morning, where I would always, this was my writing time. And I would go in my office and close the door and, you know, unless the cat's on fire, you know, don't bother me.
Maybe it depends on which cat. No.
Yes, and if you've already tried for more than 2 minutes to put him out and it's not working, then you can come get me. And then once my son was, and my wife at the time was fine with that. She did some writing herself, and she understood that need. When my son was born, I did the best I could to maintain that time, but the demands on my wife at the time, of course, had escalated exponentially. So there needed to be more of a trade-off on the other side. When I came out of that room at 9 o'clock in the morning, having written for a couple hours, okay, you know, this part of this huge chunk of this day now is all you. So you learn to have those trade-offs. I'm separated now, and so divorced now, and so I have my son half the time. So there are days when the house is mine again, the place that I live now.
Yeah.
So that lends itself again to just a little more of that quiet time. You have this sense that those needs are being taken care of elsewhere. I don't need to worry about him today unless some kind of emergency comes up. So I'm just going to hunker down and get, you know, 5 or 6 hours of writing done today. And I've been able to get that back into my life again on a fairly regular basis, which has been nice. Not that I would, you know, advise divorce for anyone, but...
Every now and then I jokingly tell my wife, I try to convince her for us to get divorced just so we could have that joint custody situation.
I understand. Well, I always go back to Charlie Baxter was a faculty member at the writing program where I got my MFA, and one thing he said, I read this right about the time my son was about to be born, and I was a little nervous about this. He said, you know, having kids means you write fewer books. And I think that's true now that I'm in the middle of it myself. I think when you look back, you know, and you're 80 or something and you're looking back on your life as a writer, and hopefully if we continue to publish novels or whatever it is we write, we've got a certain body of work to look back on. I think if you had lived a life without children, that body of work would be larger. And I believe that now that I'm in the middle of, because it just carves into those hours. And there are certain numbers of hours that you have to devote to other things. And, that pool of available hours then that's left outside job and sleep and drinking gets gradually smaller when you have a kid. So you do the best you can with the time you have left in that space, but it's smaller.
Yes. And, well, for a little while, I mean, so I had this stepson for a little while before I had a kid from the beginning with my wife. I don't know what you call that, a biological kid. And I at first was just so terrified. Like, the idea of writing less to me sounded horrifying, and I had overlooked the whole payoff of having kids, which is, it's a pretty remarkable experience that very few people regret, in the big scheme of things. And you're a different person, and you end up writing different things that you would have not, you know, insights you would have not come to otherwise. So that was the other part. Like, I was thinking, oh, I'm just going to write less, and there would be nothing good to show. And then I realized, oh, yeah, it's amazing having kids.
Yeah, that's true. You learn a lot more about yourself than you would ever. And whether or not that actually overtly manifests itself in your writing or not, you know, I still think it's a larger pool, it's a larger well of emotions and self-knowledge to draw from than you ever would have had before. One last thing I wanted to ask you about. You mentioned Powell's, our wonderful local independent bookstore.
Yeah.
One other thing that we're going to share shortly in a couple weeks here. You had your kickoff book launch reading there last summer. Mine's in a couple of weeks on June 10th.
Yeah.
Tell me about what that experience was like. I mean, that must have been, if you're like me in the space I'm sitting here right now, a couple weeks out, that's a pretty momentous night. To look forward to, and then have to sort of go up and perform, and then kind of come down from afterwards. What was that evening like for you?
Yeah, that was pretty fabulous. I mean, the additional quality to it for people like us who live here is, you know, part of it was just getting to read at this wonderful bookstore, but the other thing was to see friends and acquaintances and people you've been to school with, people you'd written with, people, editors of publications that you've been rejected from, you know, all kinds of facets of your literary life there in different bits and pieces. And that was pretty, pretty amazing just to have that experience. I get pretty tremendous stage fright. I'm pretty terrified to speak in public. And so I was a bit of a wreck, but it was also a rush. It was fun both stumbling and in a way that nobody thought was amusing, and also being able to make fun of myself in ways that, you know, that did make people laugh. So it was a pretty fun thing for me. I wish I had a little more practice before I got to Powell's, but I still loved everything coming together and all these different pieces of my life there. So that was, I think, I had done one reading a month prior for an event in LA, and then I did a reading for my book release the day before in Seattle. So, you know, I had a few under my belt, but I was still kind of working out.
Yeah.
How to speak in public without curling into the fetal position and hiding under the podium. So,
again, it's so antithetical to the thing that we do day to day.
Yeah, it's a weird...
We crawl deeply inside our own heads, try to get something interesting and funny and insightful onto the page, and then to go out and actually read those words for people, or in your case, create a video piece to go along with all of everything else. In my case, to put a guitar on and go out there and play a couple songs is even more terrifying.
Do you think that'll
I've been reading since I was four. So the reading part doesn't scare me that much, but the guitar part is pretty terrifying. I don't have a lot of experience doing that in front of people. So I'm much more nervous about that part of it than I am about anything else.
Wow, that sounds amazing to do that combination of, so you're nervous, but I would think the guitar, I mean, like, I'm not so musically inclined, so I don't know what it's like to perform that way. But with the reading, you know, you've got the book in front of you. Now, with the playing guitar and singing, do you have some of that, like, at least, you know, it's not like you're improvising it, but yet you're having to do a lot more different things than just read.
You are. And I actually counted them up once. And I will have the song sheets on the podium with me, I think. So just in case I forget a line or something, I can look there. But, yeah, you have to remember the chords, remember the words, play the chords right, sing the words right, and then sort of like project some kind of overall performance aspect of it as well. There's like five things that you're juggling for 3.5-4 minutes. When you've been a musician all your life, it's all second nature, but none of it is second nature to me. It's like literally part of my brain is sort of is projecting something. Part of my brain is trying to remember the next line. Part of my brain is going, okay, after the B minor, it goes to the C, and then it goes to the D minor. And it's like you're compartmentalized into like 11 different tiny spaces. And if you let yourself drift for a second about, wow, that's a strange pink color she's wearing, you're gone. Because you're like in the middle of a line, and all of a sudden you've played a chord that isn't even in the song, and you got to somehow vamp it back to where you were and pick up the song again. And that's happened to me every single time I've tried to play live. So it's not exactly a long string of successful engagements behind me before I stand up there and do it in person, but what the hell?
Well,
if it goes
the one thing I
haywire, then that's just part of the charm of the thing, and I'll just stop and start over.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly what I was going to say, is the thing that helped bring my guard down a little, or my freaked outness down a little, was to realize that just kind of admitting the humility of the experience. Oftentimes people in the audience, not only do they tolerate, but they sometimes enjoy, you know, just to be straight up about, I'm a little too nervous to say what I'm about to say, so I apologize. Or, you know, if you just, with your own quirk, kind of talk through the experience a little bit. People are so comfortable with that, you know, or they kind of enjoy that on the stage.
Thank you, Pat.
So that part helped me, where it's like, oh, I can trip up a little, and that's part of the event.
I mean, people are there
to see
you. They're not there to get a perfect reading of your work or whatever. They're just there to see you, share your moment. Or if they don't know you, they're there to kind of get a sense of something about the book intrigued them. You know, they want to like you as a person. And sometimes if you acknowledge some of those nerves or mistakes or something, it can kind of make it a little more empathetic. All right, we should wrap this up. Let me close by saying thanks, first of all, for joining. Let's mention our books are both available any place fine novels are sold. In addition, you can learn more about each of us at our websites. For me, it's robyardumian.com. For UV, it's uvzalco.com. And UV has a number of amazing videos that you can go check out on his site. And everything else.
Good luck spelling either of our names.
Robyardumian. I'll let you spell your own name.
Yuvizalkow.com. Well, and I can't wait for your release, and I'll definitely be there at least one of your events. So it comes out June 10th?
June 11th, and June 10th is the reading at Powell Cawthorne.
Okay, great.
All right, well
thanks
thank
for
you
having
you
me
much,
on.
And we'll chat soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks.
Without a hand to hold, but it's all right, I'm okay, how are you? For what it's worth, I must say, I love you. And in my bed, late at night, I miss you. Someone is gonna save my heart, no one is gonna break my heart again.
nothing around me turned to rust. It's 'cause I built my life on sand, and I watched it crumble in the dust. Yeah, but it's alright, I'm okay. I wanna know how you are and what it's. But everything around me turned around. But I know all I have to do is sing. And I lift myself way off the ground. Yeah.